Okay, well, I'm still watching the attendees increase, but we do have a lot to get through today, so I think we will start our session. So good morning, everyone, and welcome to the first fall session of BLG's In-House Counsel Series. I'm Sarah Bird, and I'm a partner in BLG's corporate commercial group in Vancouver, with a focus on infrastructure development, project finance, and Indigenous matters. And it's my pleasure to be here this morning to moderate today's discussion. Just a couple of housekeeping matters. One, attendance today will provide you with 1.5 CPD hours with the Law Society of British Columbia. So make sure to claim that. We do want this to be an interactive discussion, and so we are going to ask our participants to post any questions in the chat function, and time permitting, we'll do our best to get to questions from our attendees. So today we are here to talk about transportation and supply chain, a shift in movement. Transportation systems, as we all know, are a backbone of our economy and our society. And in the last 18 months, we've seen dramatic changes. We've had to be adaptable, we've had to shift, and we've had to change the way we function. And what has happened to our transportation of people and goods, and how have we had to shift and adapt given the last 18 months? The effects of this pandemic we've experienced have been felt across the transportation sector, no doubt, and the leaders in this sector have needed to adjust course, to spend time to figure out how to recover and thrive in the face of this pandemic. There's been a pressure on organizations during the pandemic to shift from moving people, perhaps, to keeping the core transportation system operational and ensuring freight and people continue to move, sometimes with very, very skeleton workforce. So, without further ado, we're excited to have you join us for what will be a very extremely relevant and insightful discussion to learn first how transportation organizations have adapted and excelled over the last 18 months, with a focus on the challenges, solutions, and innovations that organizations have seen in the past 18 months, we will explore how the landscape has changed in this industry and our panelists, specifically YVR, TransLink, and Via Rail. So I'd like to now introduce our esteemed panel. We have three outstanding and accomplished women from three exceptional organizations. First, we have Sepide Sep Alavi, one of our BLG alums. She is legal counsel for YVR and its Innovation and Technology Group, responsible for developing and delivering innovative technology around the world and maintaining the organization's data needs through robust business intelligence. She is also co-chair of YVR's Cyber and Privacy Committee, and provide support for YVR's strategic plan to rethink their operations to become the region's gateway to the new economy. In her role as counsel, SEP advises and guides YVR on commercial, procurement, technology, intellectual property, and other legal matters. As you do when you're in-house counsel, you have to have broad exposure. Ensuring YVR's operations in accordance with laws while reaching business goals. She provides legal opinions and risk management strategies to the business team and senior management, as well as advising on cybersecurity, privacy program management, and reporting to the board of directors on related matters. SEP is also involved in negotiating tactics and structuring advice for international arrangements with customers, vendors, and other partners in connection with current technology products and services. Welcome, SEP. We also have Salima Datu, who is the Director of Legal Services at TransLink. Salima's department includes four lawyers, one paralegal, and herself, provides legal support for TransLink, as well as its two operating companies, Coast Mountain Bus Company and BC Rapid Transit Company. Prior to TransLink, Salima worked at BC Transmission Corporation, and in private practice in both Vancouver and Toronto. Welcome, Salima. Last but certainly not least, we have Genevieve Richard, Vice President, Legal Services and Regulatory Compliance with Via Rail Canada. She is in charge of managing the legal team of Via Rail, composed of lawyers, paralegals, and claims specialists. With a background spanning over 20 years in M&A, retail, transportation, and IT project management, Genevieve is recognized as a business visionary leader and a change agent, specializing in a business transformation, growth, and expansion, as well as reshaping organizations to ensure sustainability of their business. Prior to joining Via Rail, Genevieve worked at Belron Canada, a company specializing in the automotive glass replacement, repair, and distribution industry, as well as the CSL Group, specializing in maritime transportation and international trading. She's a graduate of Université de Sherbrooke and Université de Montréal. Throughout her career, Ms. Richard sat on CBA and Quebec Bar committees and has always invested time to share best practices with the legal community. So thank you all for joining us today, and we are excited to just get right in there and dive into this conversation. One more reminder that should you have any questions that you wish to pose to our panel, let me know in the chat function and I'll do my best to address as many as we can. Okay, so let's get right into it. This first question I'm going to ask to each of our panelists, and it's just a question about if you could share a brief overview of your organization and what the past 18 months has looked like, given what, you know, this pandemic has done to all of our lives and our society. So perhaps I'll first pass it over to Salima.
Morning, everyone, and thanks, Sarah. So as Sarah mentioned, I'm at TransLink, and TransLink is the regional transportation authority for the Lower Mainland. Most people know TransLink as providing transit, and we definitely do that, but there's also a little bit more. We are also responsible for the major road network, which is a series of roads that run between the municipalities in the Lower Mainland. We have a few bridges, the Golden Ears Bridge, Knight Street Bridge, Patello Bridge, walking paths, cycling paths, and that's all in addition to the transit network. So we've got the bus company, Coast Mountain Bus Company, and the rail company, BC Rapid Transit Company, and its subsidiary, West Coast Express, that run some of the transit or most of the transit system in the Lower Mainland. But we also have a number of other companies that we work with, transit providers. So the Canada Line concessionaire, also West Vancouver Transit, and our Handy Dart services are run by First Transit. So it's a big sort of group of companies working together to provide transit and other transportation needs for the people of the Lower Mainland. Just like everyone, the last 18 months have been surreal and busy and intense, but also a remarkable display of resiliency and perseverance and just working together as a team and a large team to deal with everything that has come our way. So there's been COVID, of course, for everybody, and we've been navigating those challenges, not just for our employees, but also for members of the public who are riding our transit system. And we've been balancing sort of empty buses because everybody's working from home or staying home with other bus routes that have been remarkably full, the bus routes that pass by hospitals where essential workers have been throughout the pandemic continuing to go into work to help the people of this region. And so that has been, you know, dealing with COVID over the last 18 months and all of the waves have been quite a challenge. And because, you know, things are always interesting at TransLink, we also have been dealing with a cyber attack. So we were the victim of a cyber attack on December 1st, 2020, and had to deal with all of that while also still dealing with COVID-related items. And then if you go back, actually, for TransLink, even prior to the pandemic, and I know Genevieve will probably touch on this as well later, but we had blockades going on around the Lower Mainland. And it was important for TransLink to be able to still continue to run the transit system safely for the public, for its employees, but also provide an opportunity for people to express themselves if that's what they were going to do. So we were also dealing with the injunctions, and prior to that we were dealing with bargaining and potential strikes and labor disruptions on the system. So it's been a bit more than 18 months of challenges and different opportunities at TransLink, but as I mentioned earlier, a lot of teamwork, a lot of resilience, perseverance, and just doing the best that we can for the people of the region.
Thanks, Salima. Yes, indeed. We here in the Lower Mainland thank TransLink for continuing to provide services during this very interesting time. Perhaps I'll shift next to SEP and ask SEP, what has give us a brief overview of YVR and what the last 18 months have looked like for you.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to be here. And similar to Salima, I think we've had some similar issues here. So I'll start with the basics just about the Vancouver Airport Authority and what often surprises people when I speak about the airport. So the airport is actually a community-based not-for-profit organization that manages Vancouver International Airport, which we all refer to as YVR. And we are under a ground lease with the Canadian government. So we're not a government entity, although we work closely with our government partners in our day-to-day operations. And as you might remember from your traveling days, I know it seems far away for most of us. We're located on Sea Island between Vancouver and the city of Richmond on the traditional territory of the Musqueam people. So our work at YVR expands beyond just the terminal where we enable tourism and trade, but towards our several satellite facilities on Sea Island. We're also the 50% owner of MacArthur Glen Outlet Mall. So that is an innovative joint venture for an airport to be involved with, I'd say. And we do have a history of creating innovation and innovative travel solutions here at YVR, such as Border Express, which is the kiosk-based border control solution that we have. So we ended up solving our own problem in-house with that, and we ended up commercializing and selling that technology across. And and that's where I was actually recruited over to work at the Innovative Travel Solutions team about 4 years ago. And that's where I used to focus before my role shaped and shifted to what it is today to support the entire organization as a result of COVID and other changes that we've had internally. And there have been many. So YVR and other airports were one of the first to be impacted, I'd say, from the impacts of COVID starting about 18 months ago. We saw this especially with our Asian passengers coming through. And I remember even warning some of my friends about this new virus that nobody had really heard about. It wasn't that common in the media just yet. And like the transportation industry, we continue to deal with this uncertainty in the world, in our industry, our workforce, and each of us on a personal level. Commercial aviation has seen a dramatic reduction in passengers and flight volumes, which I'm sure comes as no surprise to all of you. There's been imposed travel restrictions, constantly changing health and safety protocols from the government. And that's really impacted us on an ongoing basis. And if you've come to the airport, you might have noticed there's lots of parts of the airport that are still closed off, and that will continue to likely impact us beyond 2021. So to operate an airport and the second busiest airport in Canada during a pandemic, while trying to remain safe and efficient for our passenger experience, continuing with innovation, has been challenging, time-consuming, and constantly changing and evolving, I'd say. And our legal department in particular has been heavily relied upon during this time to update our contracts, to review force majeure and payment provisions, to support relief efforts, do risk mitigation, and regulatory compliance, whether it's been in the health and safety matters that we've had to deal with or cross-boarding of our staff, because there were a lot of shifts within our own workforce too, or ensuring security and privacy issues were addressed because there have been a lot more risks for cyber during this time. So we've definitely seen an increased level of accountability during this time. And with new leadership that we had this past year, we ended up re-examining some of our assumptions for the future and our planned responses to them. We ended up launching a new strategic plan, which focuses on six strategic areas, which one of them you mentioned being the gateway to the new economy. So we've been working really hard to try to achieve that, to rethink our operations, to become more of a hub for learning and leading innovations beyond just aviation. And we've been engaging our community in new ways to try to support the economy. So I've personally had to roll up my sleeves and yeah, learn about new cutting edge technologies, and support the business beyond just legal. And yeah, so we have been fortunate, though. We did have some good news throughout this period. We ended up winning the 12th consecutive year of the Skytrax Award, which is the best airport in North America. And we were also recognized in a new award category, I believe, for COVID-19 airport excellence. So I believe that's for having the cleanest, safest, and healthiest airport in the world. So we have been trying to do our best during this time, but it hasn't been a challenge in these truly unprecedented times. Thank you.
Thanks, Seth. Yeah, absolutely. It's just, it's so interesting to hear how, and I hope we can talk about it more, how the roles that we each have, and especially you three, have shifted and grown and expanded, and you'd have to take on more in this challenging last 18 months. So Genevieve, over to you. Same question, a little bit about Via Rail and what the last 18 months have looked like for you.
A whirlwind of new opportunities, that's what I would call it. So just as a reminder for it, Via Rail as a Crown Corporation is in existence for close to over 45 years now. And we were, prior to the pandemic, on a journey of modernizing our whole operation, whether you look at it from an IT reservation system point of view, from a going greener, establishing more key actions on our ESG policies, transforming and modernizing our maintenance centers. And good news for all of us, some of you may have seen in the media, our new train sets have left Siemens facility in California, are on their way to our facilities in Ontario and Quebec for starting the winter testing period. So this is a very exciting time for VIA. So prior to pandemic, we were already 150% invested and busy as part of our transformational initiative. And then we had our, what we call pre-COVID trial run, which were the blockade that Salima hinted towards, which basically tested our organizational resiliency and capacity to manage crisis event. And how do we make sure that in some areas of the country, we've got three key segments of business, one being the corridor, the other one the long hauls, the other one the regional trains, who service communities out west, in the prairies, even up north Quebec, which don't necessarily have many different means of transportation to get from point A to point B. So on that note, this is an essential service that we had to start learning on how do you maintain it, how do you tackle it. We've learned a lot about our clientele throughout the pandemic, about, you know, professional in the health sectors that were living in Kingston, taking our trains to go and work in Toronto every day, morning and night. So we were used more than just as an intercity transportation transporter in the corridor. We were actually looked at as an essential service by many. So that has led our team to really test our resiliency and capacity, I would say, for my legal team to work with cross-functional realities on at all times and be able to move from strategic, operational to tactical elements in terms of reviewing all our policy, making sure that our workers who would still come in every day at our maintenance centers across the country in Vancouver, Winnipeg, whether it's Toronto or Montreal or even in Halifax, are able to stay safe. And we're having due processes to make sure that they felt supported by the organization. It was very hard for us, actually, the beginning of the pandemic, because we had to lay off close to one third of our workforce, which was a historical step for Via Rail. And we know that some of our workforce is is also seasonal. If I look at the Canadian, it goes from Toronto to Vancouver. We really recently brought it back for the whole run, but we had to revisit our service offering as well. And technology and changes that was already going on, that was an extra layer that sort of forced our people to, I would say, most of the lawyers in my team started to act like business people who happened to have a law degree and not necessarily as lawyers. So it forced everybody out of their comfort zone, which to me was a good thing because it was a tribute to showing leadership and growth from a personal development perspective of our people. So, and right now, nowadays, we talk about the pandemic, but for us, it's part of our day-to-day. It's the new reality. So, I mean, I don't know for you guys, and I'm sure the airport sector was as bad, but if I look at our average passenger rate in the corridor, which was about more than 15,000 passenger a week on peak season, we went down to 265 passengers at one point. So that was not a lot of people to carry from point A to point B. But how do you balance that out while we're managing also public funds and an operational deficit? Because we do have a social mandate given to us by the federal authorities. So much fun.
Absolutely. And luckily we have a full 90 minutes here because I'm sure we could spend a whole day talking about all these issues. Perhaps we'll move on to another question for all three of you as well. And perhaps I'll start with Sepp on this one. Sepp, how have people's travel habits changed? I mean, we've touched a little bit on it already this morning, but how have people's travel habits changed? And what have you had to do to adapt to that in the short term? And then sort of as kind of what Geneviève was saying, the long term also, is this here to stay? Like, do we have to consider people's travel habits long term, not just for the short term?
Okay, good question. Yeah, as we see the world opening up and travel opening up and tourism, we are starting to see passenger numbers increase slowly as both Canadian and foreign nationals return to YVR. Just coming into the office this morning, it was nice to see the amount of domestic travelers that we have. And although it's not the same numbers from 2019, I think we were at a record of 26.4 million passengers then. We are not at that number anymore. So it's a different world now. And we are starting to recognize that some of these passengers that are coming into our airport haven't been here for over a year, and it might be their first time returning to the airport. So the experience of traveling looks different. It feels different. And especially as we're trying to meet these federal and provincial health authority requirements to ensure that people's return is happening in a safe way. So we are continuing to adapt and communicate publicly on this topic about changes of information to ensure the passenger journey through YVR is more effortless. And as part of our efforts, you might have seen that we launched a Take Care program. It's an operational program for our health and safety campaign, basically designed to help passengers and employees as they move throughout the airport to have a little bit more confidence as they come through. We also launched another campaign, I believe it's called Ready, Set, Fly, and that was to help engage and inform our community too and our passengers so they know what to expect when they come back. But yeah, as a result of COVID, YVR and particularly the team that I work with, we've seen an increased focus on innovation to try to adapt in the short and the long term to solve some of our problems. Some examples of what we've rolled out so far, we have like a new mobile app that we've created for the authority employees to help track health and safety and what's going on there. We've set up rapid testing pilots in our airport with other airlines for COVID. We started piloting a virtual concierge solution that leverages AI on the back end to provide customer service when we weren't able to have as many volunteers in our airport. We actually ended up adapting our kiosk solution, the one that I mentioned earlier, Border Express. We added self-cleaning and contactless features to it. So that was a way we were trying to adapt in the short term. And so those features, for example, use ultraviolet cleaning light technology to kill bacteria on the surface where you would have the document and fingerprint scanners. We also have gesture-based technologies that we included on our kiosk. So you don't actually have to touch the screen anymore. You can just move your finger across the screen screen and it'll move the cursor for you on the kiosk. So those are just some examples. We even got involved and had our operational team use their expertise, and we use some of our staffing to help the Richmond Vaccine Center here at the casino. So that's been great. And then another shift, because people's habits are changing, we've actually focused a bit on advancing our cargo operations here at YVR. It's a new era of travel and logistics. So we are working on some interesting projects on the cargo front. I can't say too much about them because we're under an NDA, but we are working with our cargo community partners to promote more digitalization, such as perhaps an Ergo cargo community system. We're also working with our partners and universities to run a drone pilot, potentially from YVR domain, that would carry cargo. So those are some ways that we're trying to advance in the short and long term. And from some of the examples that I've given you, it just shows how apparent it is that innovation and technology transformation is the way of the future. And from a legal risk or legal perspective, I'd say the risk mitigation and management, as Genevieve mentioned, that's really falling on legal counsel now. We're doing more of the business side of things. So we have had to adapt as lawyers with all of these new business projects and partnerships that we're doing at this time at the airport. And it's kind of funny because we don't realize as lawyers, I think when we're in private practice, our ability to problem solve and analyze situations and lead projects and organize projects, especially if you have an M&A background too. But we do have the ability to identify issues and help the business team see the bigger picture of things and really help them in this new territory. So yeah, that's kind of what it's looked like here at YVR as travel habits have changed and we've had to adapt in the short and the long term.
Thank you, Sep. Perhaps, Genevieve, over to you. What has the travel habits looked like with VIA? What's your experience been like with people's travel habits? And what has happened in terms of adapting to these changes in the short and long term?
I think it allowed us as a corporation to understand better the ramification of our various types of traveler. You've got the leisurers, you've got the people with who are retired and they just want to enjoy Canada and use our trains as a vehicle to discover what they never had time to do when they were working like all of us. So, but you also have the essential portion of travelers, which for some reason was a bit under the radar for us. So it was a huge sort of learning experience for all of us. And I kind of go along the same lines as Sep. It forced all of my lawyers and the team to get off the legal ramification of things and sometimes even act as project managers to help the business see and understand how do you accommodate as part of our mandate. And it might be the same thing for you, Salima, talking about, you know, lower mainland routes and things like this. We are carrying a portion of our passengers for essential means. And one of the things that we discovered is at one point in time, people couldn't travel. But if you live up north Quebec and you don't have a Walmart, well, they would use our trains to basically ship groceries to their aunts and uncles. And we had to revisit, okay, what's the process? It's not frozen. We don't have fridge. Where do we store it? You know, it's simple questions, but that forced us to really revisit, I would say, the bigger portion of our social mandate in terms of servicing our clientele. In the Maritimes, we ended up having to stop our Halifax-Montreal service because there was the maritime bubble. It was done under an agreement with the provincial authorities of each provinces in the Maritimes. It was sad for the public, but we had to also be there to communicate to our clientele the reasons why those decisions have been taken, how we were going to bring about the service so that it's safe. People feel it's safe because you're 36 hours in a train. It's not like you're going from point A to point B in a bus for 15 minutes. Same thing if you do Montreal-Toronto, it's a five-hour leg. We basically revisited the whole touristing offering of the Canadian to make it, and it became more of a almost an essential service from you know, Calgary on to Vancouver. So we saw also a change and shift in our clientele, their need to go and use the train, their desire to do it. And it was something that is a tribute to our operational team, I believe, and our health and safety teams. Passengers throughout the pandemic were sort of poached and giving us feedback, do you feel safe? And we actually came out as one of the safest means from their perspective in terms of traveling because of allowing them to be socially distanced, allowing our procedures to make them feel safe. And at the end of the day, we're quite proud of the results of our applications because we do have apps like you guys to register our clientele and mostly with regards to employees and very few transmission rate done through our operations, which to us was a tribute of being safe and making sure that we were there for the public in times of needs because, you know, it's quite hard to see in some regions of the country, you know, the elderlies that use that transportation means to go and visit the family in town and they just couldn't do it. So how did you bring about that package to as a reminder, listen, they're back in Winnipeg, but they're thinking about you at the pod, you know, don't worry. So it's all those stories that you know, it's hard to share and circumscribes in one big element. But I think resilience and generosity and wanting to serve as the public well is a tribute to our frontline staff, I think.
Amazing. Salima, over to you. What about travel habits here in the Lower Mainland? And how has TransLink had to adapt in terms of thinking about right now and then potentially, you know, what's it going to look like in, you know, next year and the years following?
Thanks, Sarah. I'm gonna echo what Sepp and Genevieve have said and say that the lawyers here at TransLink too have stepped out of a purely legal role and provided guidance and more business guidance as we have dealt with all of the things that have come our way over the last little while. Everyone at the beginning of COVID, if they were able to, was asked to stay home and work from home. And so you can imagine that how much ridership on buses and on SkyTrain dropped dramatically. After years of unprecedented growth on the system. But at the same time, as I mentioned earlier, we had bus routes that still remained full because we have essential workers going to hospitals, going to work in those areas around the hospital where there's a lot of medical offices. And so it was a careful balance for TransLink. How do you maintain service, but also maintain service for the people who need it, but also not just run empty buses for the sake of running empty buses? And it's a big operation to cut service, to change routes, to figure out that plan, even changing frequency of things. And so in the interim, it's taking other steps before you get there. So there was lots of different things that we had to implement right away in order to keep customers safe and also to keep employees safe. We stopped front door boarding for a little while, and you had to board the bus from the back doors. Well, that also has a financial implication. You tap your Compass card at the front of the bus, and that was no longer possible. So you're balancing things like that. What does that do to fare revenue? How do we deal with that on our tariff? Advising customers of how that's going to play out. Buses can be crowded places. People standing, people sitting. Seats were taped off initially. There was barriers created around the bus drivers to keep them safe from the public and to keep the public safe from them. So, but we don't have just one bus that we use. We use buses from different manufacturers. We have different sizes of buses. It's not a one barrier fits all solution. And so there's a lot of problem solving in house. The barriers that were come up with for that we came up with for the different buses were actually, you know, our ops team just working it out and figuring it out how the best way we could do it quickly, right? Like you don't have months to implement some of these things. So it's a lot of very quick problem solving and a lot of teamwork across units in different companies, between business people, legal people, figuring out risks, managing things, and then also being sort of innovative. Once we were through what I call sort of the emergency phase of COVID, and we ended up signing an agreement with the provincial government that gave us a bit of flexibility in terms of how we operate through the pandemic, gave us flexibility to not have to lay people off. And so once you're through that, you deal with other things, mask mandates, and we had a mask mandate prior to the provincial health order. So constantly adapting to keep customers and employees safe, but then also trying to do some outreach. So we've had a very successful few months, but more than a few months perhaps, of using buses as vaccine clinics and working with the health authorities and offering our buses as a place where people can get a vaccine, and the bus pulls up at a spot, and there's advertising going on in advance, and they were essentially sort of pop-up vaccine clinics, offering an opportunity for people closer to home or in a place that was more convenient to them to get a vaccine if they otherwise couldn't. And you know, so it's constantly thinking and constantly figuring out, like, what can we do? How can we do it? How can we do it quickly to roll this out to kind of keep up as best as we can with the pandemic and with all of the curveballs that it throws our way.